This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Scotland Outdoors podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello, and thanks for choosing to listen to this. I'm Rachel Stewart. In this podcast, I speak to author, storyteller and musician Susie Briggs. She recently became the Galloway Scots Screever, and over the next year, she'll be tasked with creating exciting and original writing in Scots. As you'll hear, Susie is passionate about nature and the outdoors in Dumfries and Galloway. And she told me a bit about her life as we walked round some of the places which have inspired her.
Well, I grew up in Dumfries in the Toon in a council estate, in two different council estates, Lochside and Lincluden. And it was a wee bit rough and there was always building sites to play on and that, but when the frost came, it seemed to change the landscape of the place. It became enchanting and magical. And I mind going for walks with my father at night time when it was so sparkling like that. And it inspired me to write Nip Naps, which was published in 2017. And Nip Naps was illustrated by Ruthie Redden. The pictures are absolutely gorgeous. And it's a story about Jack Frost and how he makes the landscape beautiful and pristine. So to see my wee toon just turn absolutely pristine is just otherworldly. It was like being stepping into the world of the fae almost. And I mind my father and my mother telling me to put my socks on or knit-nibs will come and prinkle your tays and things like that. And inside the council house there would be like forests and ferns on the windows, like painted, but it would be on the inside of the windows. It was before double glazing. And although we were freezing, I did feel there was just some sort of magic with it.
And of course you write in Scots and Galloway Scots as well, and you obviously love the words that are local to this area.
I do love the words. When I first started writing in Scots, I didn't have any Scots literacy at all. All I was ever taught to read and write in was English. So when I started translating some of my English written stories into Scots, there was a line in the story Lass Berry which said it was a cold frosty morning in Jeannie's garden. And so I started looking up words in the Scots language dictionary for frost and ice, and when I did that I saw words like crumshy, which is a sound that snow makes under feet.
I like that a lot.
Crumsh, crumsh, crumsh. And there's words like shockle, which is icicle, which makes sense. Shockle. Words like skinkling. It's one of my favourite words, which is sparkling. And from reading those, they were like jewels in my mouth, and I had to write them down. I had to weave something with them. And that's when Nip Nebs was born, through that. And it was a wee poem story initially, and I showed it to Ruthie Redden. We connected through the love of all things fae, a lovely person. She listened to the words and she said, she wasn't a Scots speaker herself, she was fae England. She said, I don't know what it all means, but I can feel it. I feel it and I need to paint it. So she did, and she started painting the illustrations for Nip Nebs in her own time. And we hoped and we knew we would get it published. We didn't ken how. there was a lot of adversity against us about it getting published because it was seen as too niche a market to be writing in Scots language for Wanes, a picture book. It was just seen as, like, nobody does that. So, but we just hoped and we knew, and the magic stuff happened in the middle, and it did. It happened.
Out by in the shady of the pale moonlicht, the rakes about a canty wee sprig, with his cal cal breath and his poke fu skinkles, he garbs all things with a licksome prinkle.
Even as a little girl, you loved spending time outside in the garden, observing everything that was going on.
Aye, I loved it. I loved being in the garden. In fact, that kind of links to my latest book, Yum, where wee Jenny's out in her garden with a cheese and lettuce piece and three wee creatures, a craw, a moose and a hairy ubbit, which is a caterpillar.
A caterpillar, what a fabulous word.
And the caterpillar... When I discovered the name for a caterpillar, Hairy Ubit, I thought, oh, I've got to weave that into a story. It's so beautiful. So they come along and they basically hint very heavily for a bit of the cheese and lettuce piece. And, of course, she shares it with them. And it's a story for nursery Wayne, so it's really simple and awfully gentle. But my memories of Hairy Ubits were in amongst the nasturtiums that my papa had planted in the garden. And I spent hours hunting for hairy ubits in amongst them, and I loved butterflies and speeders and slaters, all kinds of wee things. Just loved them. Make them be hoosies.
That just sounds so lovely. You mentioned that you look up a lot of the words, but you are obviously a native speaker as well, so a lot of them will have been familiar to you.
Okay, aye, definitely. A lot is familiar, but there's a lot of beautiful words that we didn't use every day. And if you didn't use it, you lose it. So I like to try and put that into my work as much as possible as a poet, as a storyteller, as a writer, so yeah.
Have you got a favourite one?
Oh, there's so many good ones. I like puddock. I like the way it sounds. Puddock is for frog. Mm-hmm. And puddock features on our wee podcast as a song by Alan McClure. And it's absolutely hilarious. I love that song. I kind of get enough of it.
You mentioned your papa a little earlier, and you went out on adventures with him, didn't you, exploring some of this beautiful landscape?
Uh-huh. I was very lucky to have my papa till I was about the age of 5. And up until that age, he would take us out, all of us. There was 4 kids. I've got 3 siblings, and I was the youngest. And my mum and my dad, there'd be 7 of us piled into a Broon Reynolds estate, which features in my poem, The Root and Brig. And he would tuck us out to beautiful places. And one of my favourite places he would take us was the Root and Brig, which is just outside Dumfries. And it's this beautiful arched bridge. And if you're at the bottom by the river, there's this beautiful big stone that juts out from the forest edge. And then the arch of the brig, like, frames the waterfall. And it's the most perfect... Oh, it's just like a painting. It's just so beautiful. And every time we went there, I was so excited because I'm pretty sure there's fairies down there, because I'm sure I've seen them, and I think I still do see them when I get down there. I just turn into a little child again. Aww. I love it.
So you were inspired to write about that place?
Absolutely. We got a commission from the Tristan Thorne's poets. We got a commission from the Scottish Poetry Library to respond to Nan Shepherd. And Nan Shepherd wrote about nature, as you'll ken.
The living mountain.
The living mountain, indeed. Now, I'm no one for climbing mountains. I'm far too lazy and feared for that. I prefer to look at them from the bottom and go, oh, look at that, that's beautiful. And I admire folk that go up them. I think it's great, but it's just no for me. So I wasn't sure how I was going to connect with her work. I could appreciate it. But I pondered on the title, The Living Mountain, and that directly linked me to my papa and how he opened the doors to nature for me as a child, and that enchantment of nature that I still will come back to when I need it. And when I'm brokenhearted, I'll come back to nature, and that's where I'll heal myself again. And that's what inspired The Root and Brig. Let's gan for a run. 7 of us pile into the Broon Reynolds estate, wriggling for room. My sister Debbie hods me ticked around my waist in the days afore seatbelt laws. My other sister gurns about my brother's bony arse digging into her legs and gets telt off for swearing. Papa stops at the shop for juice, crisps and sausage rolls. We didn't gan that far, but at 4 year old it felt like we were gone to the moon. A waffy the clatter of the council estate, a waffy noisy neighbours, and that radgy boy at the park we aye piddled on the slide so nobody else could play on it. I keep my een on the road like I've been telt, and try no to breathe and taste the fag reek of aye been easy scunnert in a car. Papa says, look for it to the road ahead, Susie. You will only feel sick if you do that. And stop eating your snotters, you'll get worms. Down the road, past moocoos and sheepy mares, I anticipate each bend to where the wild garlic and bluebells await. I seek the old kirk o' iron grey, a beacon in the summer sun, its familiar sandstain and white paint, a signal that we are no far now. We stop just afore the brig. All arms and legs are burst out the car, dappled green and sunbeam swirls. The wee birds lilt their skinkling songs, over the roar of the blattering water. My wee heart loups and thrums and I get instant fairyland disco fever. I run to the top of the steep path, down onto my hunkers, I skiddle down to my enchanted fairyland escape. The rocks and ferns conceal secret places where the fae folk hide fae mortal men. They dinna hide fae me though. They ken I'm all richt and they come out to play. I marvel at the white waterfall, cascading bricked, plashing against the arc wet stains. A rainbow portal shimmers and vanishes. I slip off my shin and plant my feet on the dry shingle shore. Grit fins its way atween my taes, then disperses with the first dip. Each slow step in the cold brown water fins fit hod and grooves atween slippy stains. My hands racks out, ready to touch the muckle rock that juts out fae the forest edge into the flow, pure and certain. Paddling pixies and droothy bumblebees enjoy the shally water pools in the crevices of this ancient mossy seat. Above the arch frame of the cascading white water, my old papa has ascended to the top of the tree, or so it seemed. I can still hear him shout, Susie, look up! The other thing with the Nan Shepherd Commission was I wrote the Brickle Signal, which is my shortest poem. And Brickle means brittle. And at the time of writing these poems, I was in a very sad place. I'd lost a friend. I was grieving and I was feeling very bleak. And in Nan Shepherd's work, she talks about the mountain being a dark and desolate place at certain times of year. And she still goes there because there's always something beautiful to see. And that felt like my inner sort of feeling at the time, that somehow, you know, I had these bleak and desolate feelings and sadness. And I tried to connect with Nan, and so what I did was I climbed up Vinnie Hill, not very far from here. It's really just a pimple in comparison to the mountain she would have climbed. But I thought, I'll need to do something to honour this woman. So I climbed up Vinnie Hill and I sat at the top, and up there I was pondering about these feelings, and I put that part of the book where she's talking about the mountain being a dark and desolate place and always finding something beautiful. And I saw a white feather dangling in a spider web. And it just really shone out to me. And from that, this poem came, The Brickle Signal. Blinking wind-stung tears, I pulled a feather off a web. Its bricked white shone a brickle signal. In this desolate place, O Trockle and Triumph, my cold hand cradles a whispered hope. And that's what nature brings to me. Brickle signals of hope. When I'm sad and when I'm really happy, the fae folk come out to play and I'm just sparkling with joy again.
You don't really need to be able to climb mountains to get a connection with the kind of thing that Nan Shepherd was talking about.
No. It's about connecting with the earth and just being mindful and connecting with things like hairy ubits and spiderwebs and feathers and beautiful things that just that catch your eye for that moment. You didn't have to solidify it in any kind of way. You just have to be in the moment with it and absorb its beauty and take the signals that nature's given you for what you need in your life at that moment.
We've walked into some woods in your local town. Tell me why these are so significant to you.
Well, years ago when I became a storyteller, I created a persona called Susie Sweet Pea the Fairy. And it was mainly because I was nervous to be myself and tell stories. So a bit of a gimmick, really, to hide behind. But also it was a wee nod to my childhood with fairies at the Rootenbrig and, you know, just that enchantment. And it was a way of me connecting with that. But as Susie Sweet Pea, the fairy storyteller, I created the magical woodland walks. And in these woods here, they came alive with characters, real life characters. Like we had a unicorn. It was a unicorn. It really wasn't a white horse with a horn stuck on his head, like some people said. It was a unicorn. We had a unicorn. We had a troll at the bridge. We had a troll there. The kids were a wee bit feared of the troll. So I gave them a sweetie to pay the troll as a troll tax. And the sweeties were a wee hard sweeties. But instead of just giving them gently to the troll, they punted them at the troll. I didn't factor that would be a thing. And the troll ended up very bruised. We had pixies that would steal your socks. So pixie sock thieves. But they would only steal one sock. And it was a wee nod to the fact that that's how you get odd socks.
Yeah, I think that pixie is alive and well in my house.
It probably is. They're not in the woods anymore, so it's probably moved to your house. And then, you know, we've had all sorts of characters. Of course, fairies, dryads, dragons, for all sorts. So bringing the woods to life with my friends dressed up as these characters were some of the best memories. And it was where I sort of cut my teeth as a storyteller. And got to meet folk and got to establish myself as a creative artist.
And by creating those characters, of course, you were able to entice children to take an interest in the woods and
exactly
the
that.
Rural locality here.
There's a generation of Waynes that would come to these magical woodland walks. They're getting a bit older now. They're in their teens now. But they still remember it. They still remember it. And they'll go around and they'll say, oh, that's where the unicorn was, and, you know, that's where the naughty fairies were that were pulling faces at us. It's like that. It was just so many good memories, and it did entice the Waynes into the forest. It really did, and families would feed back to me that it was easier to get the Waynes off their iPads and stuff and say, come on, we'll go and look for fairies and pixies in the woods and see if there's any.
Are you amazed at how quick the children pick up some of the words? You know, some of them will be quite alien to them if they've not been brought up speaking Scots or Galloway Scots in particular. Uh-huh. But are you amazed at how quickly they get a sense of what's going on?
Absolutely. And it's not that hard to understand, really. It really isn't. You just need to tune it in. I think what the problem is that Scots isn't heard or seen on the mainstream. And I don't know any other country where we didn't teach the Waynes their native language to read and write in. I find that quite a bizarre thing. Maybe there are other countries, but I would just like to see it be seen more, you know, for folk to understand it's not an ancient language. It's not just Burns that does it. It's contemporary, it's living, it's breathing, it's evolving. It's not just for tourist tea towels. And it's ours if we want to keep it. A lot of folk don't even ken they're speaking Scots, but you can hear it around you all the time. You can just open your lugs on the bus or the doctor's waiting room. You'll hear it all the time.
We've come out of the woods, we've left the fairies behind us, and we've now got the River Fleet to one side of us and an enormous wooden sculpture just behind us. It's of a giant, and you claim it speaks.
Yes, he does. Whenever I go past through the Waynes, he goes, hello, Violet. Hello, Freya. And they always usually say hello back, though I think they're getting a bit old for that now, but I still do it. No, sorry, he still speaks to them.
Now, you like to come here, don't you, and just soak everything up?
I do. I quite often sit here and just, you know, just relax, and sometimes I go over the road to the Wheels of the Fleet and have a wee chat with Danny, who works over there. Yeah, it's a great place to live, Gatehouse of the Fleet. And we've got the links to the Picts up that end of the town, up on past beyond Vinnie Hill, Trusty's Hill, I think it's called. We've got the mill here, the Bobbin Mill. So we had a lot of industry here. I think the Romans might have been hanging about as well at some point. I'm not that hot in history. But it's a very historical place and it's very beautiful.
Recently, you've been given a very fancy job. You need to tell me about that.
Well, fancy. Fancy schmancy. I've got this wonderful opportunity this year to write new Scots language writing. It's basically the job that I've been doing for years, is writing new Scots language work in all kinds of form. But this new role, Scots Scriver of the National Library of Scotland, means that I can give it a lot more focus and have a lot more resources, and, you know, networks are much more open to me, and I can relax a bit more in what I'm doing, and just really absorb my time and take my time to create new work. And he's up the lead, especially for Dumfries and Galloway Scots.
Yeah, why do you feel that's so important, that you can put an emphasis on this particular area?
Well, Dumfries and Galloway tend to get a wee bit forgotten when it comes to the arts and the arts funding as well, to be fair. Every part of Dumfries and Galloway has a very distinct melody from Dumfries. Dumfries folk tend to speak like me, quite fast. And Billy Connolly famously mimicked the Dumfries voice and said, "Oh, they're Bonnie Prince Charlie, take the shoes off the people." You know, they're just talking really fast. And then over in Stranraer, I'm not going to try and do their accent, I'll be lynched or something. You know, people in Stranraer have their own beautiful lilt. There's a wee the hint of Irish, Ulster Scots going on in there, and it's just a beautiful lilt that comes to their voice. So yeah.
What kind of legacy do you want to leave?
As Scots Scriver, I would like to leave the role kenning that I've done my best for Dumfries and Galloway, putting it on the map, putting our dialect on the map, and inspiring new Scots language writers to pick up the pen and give it a go, and to raise the visibility that Scots language creativity exists in a modern context.
Scots Scriver Susie Briggs, and a big thanks to her for showing me some of the beautiful places close to her home, which have helped shape her as a poet and performer. And you can find out more about her on her website, susiebriggs.co.uk. Just before we said our goodbyes, I asked Susie to pick and recite one of her poems, one that really means a lot to her. And once again, it was Nan Shepherd who provided the inspiration.
"Ayont This Room" is a reflection on the latter years of Nan Shepherd's life. Her best friend Jessie Kesson wrote to Nan while Nan was in a care home. She said, I'm going to paraphrase this, but she said, "I know you can see Clackna Ben from your window, and I know you can feel the line of it under your feet." Something like that. And I just thought that was beautiful. And the friendship she had with Jessie was just beautiful. Like, Jessie was reminding her who she is. Although Nan couldn't get out to do what she loved best, Jessie was saying, "I ken you, I know." And I thought that was a beautiful thing. And I felt "Ayont This Room" was a wee response to that letter. "Ayont This Room. I am a bairn ayont this room, girdling brown water, icy bliss, thistle doon fae floaterin, e'en glimmered wi' bumblebee's kiss. I feel that line on her slippered shin, it leads me to the door of Bray View. Sclentin rain peltering on my skin washes awa' years till I'm anew.
The path is hard gone these days. Clachna Ben hods the wecht o' the sky. Here is where the body stays. Out there is where my essence flies.